Force away the sting. Even though there was nothing he could say or do to make me change my mind, I'd thought he'd at least try to talk me out of it. More than try, demand. I had wanted him to give me 100 reasons why I should stay. He hadn't even given me one. Was it that easy to let me go?
I understand about duty.
I swiped at the tears rolling down my cheeks. Maybe he had seen it in my face. Maybe he'd heard the resolve in my voice. Maybe he'd been trying to make it easier for me. Maybe I was just making excuses for him.
Leah, I have to take care of something early, but mid-morning I'll meet you at the Blue Cistern for one last goodbye. You shouldn't be farther than that by then. Promise you'll meet me there.
What good would one last goodbye do? Wouldn't it just prolong the pain? I should have told him no, but I couldn't do that either. I saw the anguish in his face, as if he were battling something large and cruel. My news had jolted him. Maybe that was all I needed, some sign that he didn't want me to go. He had pulled me into his arms and kissed me gently, sweetly, like the first time he had kissed me, remorseful as he had been that night.
"Leah," he whispered. "Leah."
And I heard the words, "I love you," even if he didn't say them.
Chapter 43.
I hugged Birdie, kissed her cheek. I hugged her again. I'd already said my goodbyes last night, but Birdie and Gwyneth were both out on the tavern porch again early this morning with enough food stuffed into burlap sacks to feed two. Rafe and Caden were both gone before I was up. I was sorry I didn't at least get to say goodbye to Caden, but I knew I'd see Rafe later at the cistern. What was all this business he suddenly had to take care of? Maybe today was the day everyone had to live up to past lives and duties. Pauline and I had had more words before we went to bed, and she was out of the cottage even before I was this morning. There had been no goodbyes between us. I hugged Gwyneth. "You'll look after Pauline, won't you?"
"Of course," she whispered.
"Watch your mouth now, you hear?" Birdie added. "At least until you get there. And then you give them an earful."
There was the real possibility I wouldn't be given the chance to say anything. I was still a deserter. A traitor. But certainly even my father's cabinet could see the advantage at this point of setting my transgressions aside and at least letting me try to win back the good graces of Dalbrick. I smiled. "An earful," I promised her. I lifted the two sacks and wondered how I was going to load all of this onto Otto.
"Ready?"
I spun around. Pauline was dressed in her riding clothes, with Nove and Dieci tacked up and in tow.
"No," I said.
"You're not going with me."
"Is that a royal order? What are you going to do? Behead me if I follow along? Are you back to being Her Royal Highness so quickly?"
I looked at the two sacks of food in my hands, and then narrowed my eyes at Birdie and Gwyneth. They shrugged. I shook my head. I couldn't argue with Pauline anymore.
"Let's go."
We left just as we'd arrived, in our old riding clothes, with three donkeys carrying us where we needed to go. But not everything was the same. We were different now. Behind us, Taravin was still a jewel. Not idyllic, not perfect, but perfect for me. Perfect for us. I stopped at the crest of the hill and looked back, only small glimpses of the bay still visible between the trees. Taravin. I understood monuments now, Some were built of stone and sweat, and others were built of dreams, but they were all made of the things we didn't want to forget.
Leah? Pauline had halted Nove and was looking back at me. I gave Otto a nudge, and we caught up.
I had to move on to a new hope now. One made of flesh and blood and promise. An alliance. And if it would exact the revenge that I saw in Walther's eyes, so much the better.
How are you feeling? I asked Pauline. She looked at me sideways, an eye roll added in for good measure.
I'm fine, Leah. If I was able to ride all the way here at breakneck speed on Aravian, I'm certainly able to amble along at a turtle's pace on Nove. My biggest challenge right now is these riding trousers. They're getting a bit snug.
She pulled on the waistband.
We'll take care of that in Luisa Veche, I said.
Maybe we can meet with those back-alley traders again, she said mischievously.
I smiled. I knew she was trying to lift my spirits.
The highway was busy. We were scarcely out of sight of one person or another at any time. Small squads of a dozen or even fewer soldiers passed us three times. There were also frequent passing travelers returning to distant homes after the festival, sometimes in groups, sometimes alone. The company on the road was some comfort. Gwyneth's warning about an assassin had more heft now, though I'd still be impossible to identify. After weeks in the sun, and as much time with my hands in a kitchen sink, I looked more like a country maid than ever, especially riding a mop-haired donkey. Still, I kept my jerkin loosely laced so I could easily slip my hand beneath it to get to my knife if I should need it. I had no idea where Walther's platoon might have been when he said he had to catch up with them. I hoped they were still at Civica and not stationed at some distant outpost. Maybe together with Bryn and Regan we could talk some sense into him, if I got there in time.
Walther was in no state of mind to be riding anywhere.
I wanted Greta's death avenged, too, but not at the cost of losing him. Of course, I was again supposing I'd be allowed to talk to anyone at all. I wasn't sure what awaited me back in Civica. The cistern was still at least an hour away. I remembered the first time I saw it, thinking it looked like a crown on top of the hill. For me, it had been a marker of a beginning, and now it would mark the end. The last place I'd meet with Rafe. I tried not to think about him. My courage and resolve floundered when I did, but he was impossible to keep from my thoughts. I knew I had to tell him the truth about myself, why I had to say goodbye to Taravin and to him. I owed him that much. Maybe on some level, he already understood. Maybe that was why he didn't try to talk me out of it.
I understand about duty.
I wished he didn't.
Water?
Pauline held out a canteen to me. Her cheeks were pink with the heat. How I longed for the cool breeze of the bay. I took the canteen from her and swigged down a gulp, then poured some down my shirt to cool off. It was still early, but the heat on the road was already daunting. The riding clothes were stifling, but at least they offered some protection from the sun. I looked down at one of the many frayed tears in my trousers, the fabric peeling back to expose my knee, and I started laughing. Laughing so hard I could scarcely catch my breath. My eyes watered with tears. Pauline looked at me, startled, and I said,
"Look at us! Can you imagine?"
My laughter caught hold, and she let loose with a snort and laughter, too.
"It might all be worth it," she said, "just to see everyone's jaw drop."
Oh, jaws would certainly drop. Especially the chancellors and the scholars. Our laughter quieted slowly, like something wound fist tight, unraveling. And in seconds, it seemed like the whole world had fallen silent with us.
Listen.
I noticed the road was empty for once. No one ahead. And when I looked back,
No one was behind us, either. I couldn't see far. We were in a basin between hills. Maybe that accounted for the prickly silence that suddenly surrounded us. I listened carefully to the plodding of hooves on dirt, the chink and jingle of tack. The silence.
"Wait," I said, putting my hand out to stop Pauline, and then in a whisper, "Wait."
I sat there hushed, my blood rushing in my ears, and cocked my head to the side.
"Listen."
Pauline didn't utter a word, waiting for me to say something. Buck-toothed Dieci hawed behind us, and I shook my head. It was nothing, I guess. And then I saw it. There was a figure on a horse in the shadows of scrub oak less than 20 paces from the road. I stopped breathing. The sun was in my eyes, so only when he emerged from the shadows could I see who it was. I let out a relieved sigh.
"Caden," I called. "What are you doing here?"
We pulled our donkeys off the road to meet him. He brought his horse closer, leisurely, until he was only an arm's length from me. Otto pulled on his reins and stamped, nervous with the towering horse so close to him. Caden looked different, taller and stiffer in his saddle.
"I can't let you go, Leah," he said.
"He came all the way out here to tell me that?" I sighed. "Caden, I know." He reached out and grabbed my reins from me.
"Get down from your donkeys."
I looked at him, confused and annoyed. Pauline glanced from him to me, the same confusion in her eyes. I reached out to snatch my reins back. He'd have to accept.
"Bedage! Gesmine akuro fasum!"
he yelled, not to me, but toward the scrub of forest that he had just come from. More riders emerged. I gaped at Caden. "Bedage?" Disbelief left me immobile for a feverish second, and then the truth stabbed me with horror. I yanked at the reins he still clutched in his hands, fury flashing through me, and I screamed for Pauline to run. It was chaos as horse slammed donkey and Caden grabbed at my arms. I pulled away and tumbled from Otto. Our only chance of escape was running on foot and hiding in the thick scrub, if we could make it that far. We didn't even have time to move before the other horsemen were upon us. One of them snatched Pauline from Nove. She screamed, and another arm swiped at me. The silence had exploded into a fireball of noise from both man and beast. A husky hand grabbed at my hair, and I fell to the ground. I rolled and saw Pauline biting an arm that held her and getting away with the man on her heels. I didn't remember grabbing it, but my knife was clutched in my fist, and I threw it, the blade hitting her pursuer solidly in the shoulder. He screamed, falling to his knees and roaring as he pulled the knife out. Blood gushed from the wound. Caden caught Pauline, seizing her from behind, and two thick arms clamped down on me at the same time. The wounded man continued to curse and roar in a language that I knew could only be Venden. I locked gazes with Caden.
"You shouldn't have done that, Leah," he said. "You don't want to get on Finch's bad side."
I glared at him. "Go to hell, Caden. Go straight to hell." Unwavering, he never blinked, his steadfastness now transformed into something frighteningly detached. He switched his attention from me to a man near him.
"Malik, this one will have to ride with you. I hadn't counted on her."
The one named Malik stepped forward with a lewd smile and grabbed Pauline roughly by the wrist, taking her from Caden.
"Gladly."
"No," I yelled. "She has nothing to do with this. Let her go."
"I can't do that," Caden answered calmly,
handing Finch a filthy rag to stuff under his clothing for the wound.
"Once we're in the middle of nowhere, we'll let her go."
Malik dragged Pauline toward his horse as she clawed and kicked at him.
"Caden, no! Please!" I screamed. "For the gods' sake, she's carrying a child!"
Caden stopped mid-step.
"Hold up," he said to Malik.
He studied me to see if it was a ploy.
He turned to Pauline. "Is this true?"
Tears streamed down Pauline's face, and she nodded.
He scowled.
"Another widow with a baby," he said under his breath. He looked back at me.
"If I let her go, will you come along without a struggle?"
"Yes," I answered quickly, maybe too quickly.
His eyes narrowed.
"I have your word?" I nodded.
"Kez mikaren," he said.
The arm that clamped me so tightly released, and I stumbled forward, not realizing my feet had barely been touching the ground. They all stared at me to see if I was true to my word. I stood motionless, trying to catch my breath.
"Leah, no!"
Pauline cried. I shook my head and put my fingers to my lips, kissing them, barely lifting them to the air.
"Please, Pauline, trust the gods.
Shh. It will be all right." Her eyes were wild with fear, but she nodded back to me. Caden stepped close to Pauline while Malik held her.
"I'm going to take the donkeys deep in the scrub and tie them to a tree. You're to stay there with them until the sun is sinking behind the opposite hills. If you leave 1 minute earlier than that, you will die. If you send anyone after us, Leah will die. Do you understand me, Pauline?"
"Caden, you can't..."
He leaned closer, holding her chin with his hand.
"Do you understand, Pauline?"
"Yes,"
she whispered.
"Good."
He grabbed the reins of his horse, shouting instructions to a smaller rider I hadn't paid attention to. He was only a boy. They took the saddlebag from Otto and strapped it to another horse, along with my canteen. Caden retrieved my knife, which Finch had thrown to the ground, and stuffed it into his own bag.
"Why can't I just kill her now?"
the boy asked.
"Ibn, 'twas Enarboche,"
the scarred burly man shouted. There was a flurry of hot language, I presumed over when and where to kill me, but even as they spoke, they moved swiftly, leading us and the donkeys to the cover of the scrub. Finch glared at me, holding his wound and cursing in broken Morrigese that I was lucky it was only a flesh wound. "My aim is poor," I told him. "I aimed for your black heart. But not to worry, the poison I dipped the blade in should take effect soon and make for your very slow and painful death." His eyes flashed wide, and he lunged at me, but Caden pushed him back and yelled something in Vendon, then turned to me, roughly jerking my arm and pulling me close.
"Don't bait them, Leah," he whispered between gritted teeth. "They all want to kill you right now, and it would take little enough for them to do it."
Even though I didn't know their language, I had gotten that message without his translation. We walked deeper into the scrub, thick with oak and buckbrush, and when the road could no longer be seen, they tied the donkeys to the trees. Caden repeated his instructions to Pauline. He motioned me to the horse I was to ride. I turned to Pauline, her lashes wet and her face smeared with dirt. "Remember, my friend, count to pass the time, as we did on our way here." She nodded, and I kissed her cheek. Caden eyed me suspiciously.
"Get up."
My horse was huge, almost as big as his beast. He gave me a hand up, but held back the reins.
"You'll regret it if you break your word to me."
I glared down at him.
"A cunning liar who relies on the word of another? I suppose I should appreciate the colossal irony."
I held my hand out for the reins. "But I gave you my word, and I'll keep it. For now." He handed me the reins, and I turned to follow the others. Pauline and I had pushed our Ravians at what seemed like breakneck speed, but these black beasts flew like winged demons chased by the devil. I dared not turn one way or another, or I would have flown from the saddle and been trampled by Caden's horse behind me. When the scrub receded, we rode abreast, Caden on one side of me, the boy Eben on the other. Only savages would train a child to kill. I tried to count, just as I had instructed Pauline to do, but soon numbers were impossible to keep in my head. I only knew we had gone miles, miles and miles, and the sun was still high in the sky. Pauline and I knew that a count to 200 was a mile covered, at least on our Ravians. She would know when the barbarians were too far away to catch up with her again. She didn't have to wait until the sun was setting behind the hills. In another hour, she'd be racing back to Taravin as fast as our slow donkeys would take her. Soon after that, she'd be safe and out of the barbarians' reach. And then the value of my word would expire. But not just yet. It was still too soon to take a chance, if I was even able to find one. There were no trails here, so I tried to memorize the landscape. We rode in wilderness, along dry stream beds, across hilly scruff, through sparse forest, and across flat meadow. I noted the position of the mountains, their individual shapes, the ridges of high timber, anything that would help me find my way back again. My cheeks stung with the wind and sun, and my fingers ached. How long could we ride at this pace?
"Sende aquí!"
Caden finally called, and they all pulled back, slowing their pace. My heart sped. If they were going to kill me, why would they bring me all the way out here to do it? Maybe this was my last chance. Could I outrun four other horses? Caden brought his horse close to mine. "Give me your hands," he said. I looked at him uncertainly, and then at the others. "I can get jewels," I said. "And more money than any of you could spend in a lifetime. Let me go, and..." They all started laughing.
"All of 2 kingdoms' money isn't worth what the Commissar does to traitors,"
Malik said.
"Gold means nothing to us," Caden said. "Now give me your hands."
I held them out, and he wound a length of rope around them. He yanked on the ends to make sure it was tight, and I winced. Finch watched and let out a yap of approval. "Now lean toward me." My heart beat so furious I couldn't breathe. "Caden, Leah, lean forward." I looked at my bound hands. Could I even ride a horse like this? My feet trembled, ready to kick my horse's sides and run for the trees in the distance.
"Don't even consider it," Caden said.
His eyes were deadly cool, never glancing away from mine, but somehow he knew my feet strained in my stirrups. I leaned toward him as he instructed. He lifted a black hood. "No!" I pulled back, but felt a hand at my back roughly pushing me forward. The hood went over my head, and the world went black.
"It's only for a few miles," Caden said. "There are trails ahead that it's better you not see."
"You expect me to ride like this?" I heard the panic in my voice. I felt Caden's hand touching both of my bound ones.
"Breathe, Leah. I'll guide your horse. Don't try to move left or right."
He paused for a moment, then pulled his hand away, adding,
"The trail's narrow. One false step, and both you and your horse will die. Do as I tell you."
My breaths were hot beneath the hood. I thought I'd suffocate long before we met any trail's end. As we went forward, I didn't move left or right, and I forced in one slow, stifling breath after another. I wouldn't die this way. I heard rocks tumbling down cliff faces, their echoes continuing on forever. It seemed there was no bottom to whatever abyss we bordered, and with each step, I vowed if I ever did meet the trail's end and was unmasked and untied, I'd never waste a chance again. If I was going to die,
It would be when I could plainly see Caden as I thrust a knife between his deceitful Venden ribs.
Chapter 44. Rafe.
It would seem she's done it again. Looks like your little dove has flown without you. No, I stared at the road, sweat trickling down my back. She promised she'd come. She'll be here. She's made promises before and found them easy enough to break. I glared at Sven. Shut up. Just shut up. We had been waiting for over an hour. The sun was high overhead. Our plans had been hastily slapped together, but I made sure I got there before mid-morning so I wouldn't miss her. She couldn't have gotten past me on the highway already, unless she'd left earlier than she had planned. Or maybe she hadn't left Terevin yet at all. Maybe something had delayed her. The highway was busy with travelers, even squads of soldiers. It was safe to travel. No bandits would dare ply their trade there. Every time another traveler came over the hill, I sat up higher in my saddle. But none of them was Leah.
Shut up? That's the best you can do?
I turned to look at Sven, sitting cocky and unperturbed in his saddle. What I'd like to do is crack you in the jaw, but I don't strike the elderly and infirm. Sven cleared his throat.
Now that's a low blow, even for you. You must really care for this girl.
I looked away, staring at the point where the highway disappeared over the hill. I whipped my gaze back at him. Where are the others? I demanded. Why aren't they here yet? I knew I was being a cocky pain myself, but the waiting was wearing on me.
Their horses don't have wings, my prince. They'll meet us farther up the highway, if and when we get there. Messages travel only so fast, even ones sent with urgency.
I'd thought I had more time. More time to break the news to her, convince her. More time for an escort to arrive. I had wanted to take her to Dalbrick, where she'd be safe from bounty hunters and her murderous father. I knew it wouldn't be easy to persuade her to leave Terevin. Impossible, more likely. It was going to be hard for me to leave. But then last night, all that planning went up in smoke. She was set on returning to Civica, the last place she should go. I was going to try to talk her out of it on the way there, but if I couldn't, I wanted a substantial enough entourage to protect her when we rode through the gates of Civica. Of course, I was going to need protection from her once I told her who I was. I'd been afraid to tell her the truth. I had manipulated her. I had lied. I had deceived her. All the things that she said were unforgivable. If she was going back to complete the alliance, I knew it wasn't to marry me. She was leaving to marry a man she'd never have a morsel of respect for. I was still that man. I couldn't undo what I had already done. I had allowed my father to arrange a marriage for me. Papa. The complete bitter disdain in her voice was still fresh in my mind. It made my stomach sour. I botched this up, Sven. He shook his head.
No, not you, boy. Two kingdoms did. Love's always a messy affair, better left to young hearts. There are no ground rules to follow. That's why I prefer soldiering. I can understand it better.
But there were rules. At least, Leah thought so. And I'd broken the most important one with my deception. If one can't be trusted in love, one can't be trusted in anything. Some things can't be forgiven. I could argue that she was living a lie too, but I knew it wasn't the same. She was a tavern maid now. That was all she wanted to be. She was trying to build a new life. I was only using my false identity for a time to get what I needed. I just hadn't known before I came here that what I needed would be Leah. Another rider came over the hill. Again, it wasn't her. "Maybe it's time to go," Sven suggested. "She's probably halfway to Civica by now, and it sounds like she's more than capable of taking care of herself." I shook my head. Something was wrong. She would be here. I pulled my horse to the left. "I'm going to Taravan to find her. If I'm not back by nightfall, come looking for me with the others." I dug in my heels and headed for the road.
Chapter 45.
The landscape was barren and hot. They had covered my eyes through two more segments of the journey. Each time they pulled the hood from my head, a new world seemed to spread out before me. The one we faced now was dry and unforgiving. Because of the intense heat, they slowed for the first time and were able to converse with each other, though they spoke only in their own tongue. It was long past the time I was to meet Rafe. There were so many things I had wanted to say to him, things I needed to say, that he would never know now. He was probably already on his way home to his farm, believing I'd broken my promise to meet him. I eyed the low, hazy mountains in the distance, then turned to look back, but saw only more of the same behind me. How close to Taravan was Pauline by now? Caden saw me assessing the harsh panorama.
"You're quiet," he said.
"Really? Forgive me. What shall we talk about? The weather?" He didn't answer. I didn't expect him to, but I stared at him long and hard. I knew he felt my seething gaze, though he fixed his sights straight ahead.
"Do you need some water?"
he asked, without looking at me. I desperately wanted a drink, but didn't want to take any from him. I turned to Eben, who was riding on my other side.
"Boy, may I have my canteen back?"
The last time they had unbound my hands and taken the hood off, I'd swung the canteen at Caden's head, so they confiscated it. Eben looked at Caden, waiting for him to decide. Caden nodded. I took a deep swig, and then another. Judging by this landscape, I knew I dared not waste any by dousing my shirt.
"Are we still in Morrigan?" I asked.
Caden half smiled, half grunted.
"You don't know your own country's borders? How very royal."
My caution snapped. It was the worst possible time to make a run for it, but I kicked my heels into my horse's sides, and we flew over the hard-packed sand. The gallop of hooves was so swift and steady, it sounded like 100 drums pounding out one continuous beat. I couldn't escape. There was nowhere to go in this vast, empty basin. If I kept this pace up for long, the relentless heat would kill my horse. I pulled on the reins and gave him free lead so he could regain his breath and rhythm. I rubbed my hand on his mane and poured some precious water over his muzzle, trying to help him cool out. I looked back, expecting them to be upon me, but they only leisurely and smugly advanced forward. They weren't going to risk their own horses when they knew I was trapped in this godforsaken wasteland. For now. That became my silent invocation. When they caught up with me, Caden and I exchanged a severe glance, but no more words were spoken. The ride was endless. The sun disappeared behind us. My backside ached, my neck pinched, my clothes chafed, my cheeks burned. I guessed we had traveled 100 miles. The haze finally gave way to brilliant orange as the departing sun set the sky ablaze. Just ahead was a gigantic outcropping of boulders as large as a manor house that looked like they had been dropped straight from the sky into the middle of this wilderness. There was another flurry of words, and Grizz did a lot of pointing and bellowing. He was the only one who didn't speak Morrigese. Malik and Finch both had thick accents, and Eben spoke as flawlessly as Caden. The horses seemed to sense that this was to be our camp for the night and picked up their pace. As we got closer, I saw a spring and tiny pool at the base of one boulder. This wasn't a random stop. They knew their path as well as any vultures of the desert might. "Here," Caden said to me simply as he slid from his horse. I tried not to wince as I dismounted. I didn't want to be so very royal. I stretched, testing to see which part was in the most pain. I turned and glared at the group. "I'm going around to the other side of these rocks to take care of some personal business. Do not follow me." Eben lifted his chin. "I've seen a lady's bum before." "Well, you're not going to see mine. Stay." Malik laughed, the first laugh I had heard from any of them, and Finch rubbed his shoulder and scowled, throwing the dried, bloody rag that had been stuffed beneath his shirt to the ground. It was certain I was on his bad side, but it had obviously been a clean wound, or he'd be in much worse shape. I wished I had dipped my knife in poison. I marched to the other side, taking wide berth around Grizz, and found a dark private place to pee. I emerged from the shadows. They would have killed me by now if they intended to. What were their intentions if not to murder me? I sat down on a low rock and looked at the foothills, maybe a mile away. Or three? Distance was deceptive in this shimmering hot flatland. After dark, would I be able to see my way well enough to escape there? And then what? I at least needed my canteen and knife to survive. "Leah?" Caden sauntered around a boulder, his eyes searching the rocks in the fading light until he saw me. I stared at him as he walked closer, his duplicity hitting me deeply and sorely, not with the wild anger of this morning, but with a gripping ache. I had trusted him. With each step he took, all of my thoughts about him unfurled into something new, like a tapestry being flipped to its backside, revealing a tangle of knots and ugliness. Only a few weeks ago I had nursed his shoulder. Only a few nights ago, Pauline had said his eyes were kind. Only 2 nights ago, I had danced with him. And just yesterday, I had kissed his cheek in the meadow. "You're a good person, Caden, steadfast and true to your duty." How little I had known what that meant to Caden. I looked away. How could he have so completely and utterly duped me? The dry sand crunched under his boots. His steps were slow and measured. He stopped a few feet away. The ache reached to my throat. "Tell me this much," I whispered. "Are you the assassin that Venda sent to kill me?"
"Yes."
"Then why am I still alive?" "Leah, just the truth, Caden. Please. I kept my word to you and came along without a struggle. You owe me that much." I feared that something worse than death was still in store for me. He took another step so he was standing directly in front of me. His face looked more gentle and recognizable. Was it because his comrades weren't here to see him?
"I decided you'd be more useful to Venda alive than dead," he said.
He decided. Like a distant god. "Today, Leah shall live." "Then you've made a strategic error," I said. "I have no state secrets, no military strategies, and I'm worthless for a ransom."
"You still have other value. I told the others that you have the gift."
"You what?" I shook my head. "Then you lied to your..." He grabbed my wrists and yanked me to my feet, holding me inches from his face. "It's the only way I could save you," he hissed.
keeping his voice low.
Do you understand? So never deny that you have the gift. Not to them, not to anyone. It's all that's keeping you alive.
My knees were as thin as water.
If you didn't want to kill me, why didn't you just leave Taravin? Tell them the job was finished, and they'd be none the wiser.
So you could return to Civica and create an alliance with Dalbrek? Just because I don't want to kill you doesn't mean I'm not still loyal to my own kind.
Never forget that, Leah. Denda always comes first. Even before you.
Fire surged through my blood, my bones. My knees became solid again. Tendon, muscle, flesh, hot and rigid. I pulled my wrists free from his grasp. Forget? Never.
Chapter 46. Rafe.
I looked everywhere along the highway for any sign of her, circling over to two nearby farmhouses in case she had stopped for water or they had seen her pass by. They hadn't. By the time I rode down the main street of Taravin, I was certain she still had to be at the inn. As I rode up, I saw the donkeys, loose and unstable, wandering around outside the tavern. The front door was open, and I heard commotion inside. I tied off my horse and ran up the porch steps. Pauline sat at a table, trying to catch her breath between sobs. Birdie and Gwyneth stood on either side, attempting to calm her. "What's wrong?" I asked. Birdie waved her hand at me. "Quiet! She just got here. Let her tell us." Gwyneth tried to give her some water, but Pauline pushed it away. I dropped to my knees in front of Pauline, grabbing her hands. "Where's Leah, Pauline? What happened?"
"They got her."
I listened as she told me the details between sobs. There were five of them. One was Caden. I didn't have time to get angry. I didn't have time to be afraid. I just listened, memorized every word, and questioned her for the important details she didn't mention. "What kind of horses, Pauline?" "Two were dark brown, three were black, all solid, no markings. The same breed as Caden's. Runners, built for endurance." But she wasn't sure. It all happened so fast. One of the men was big, very big. One was only a boy. They spoke another language, maybe Venden. Leah had called them barbarians. How long ago? She wasn't sure. Maybe 3 hours. They headed east. "Where did they stop you?" "At the dip in the highway just north of the yellow farmhouse. There's a small clearing. They came out of the scrub." "Anything else I need to know?" "They said if anyone followed, Leah would die." "She won't die. She won't." I gave orders to Birdie. Dried fish, dried anything that was quick. I had to go. She went to the kitchen and was back in seconds. There were five of them, but I couldn't wait for Sven and the others. The trail would cool, and every minute counted. "Listen carefully," I told Pauline. "Sometime after nightfall, some men will come here looking for me. Watch for them. Tell them everything you told me. Tell them where to go." I turned to Birdie and Gwyneth. "Have food ready for them. We won't have time to hunt." "You're not a farmer," Gwyneth said. "I don't care what the hell he is," Birdie said, and shoved a cloth sack into my hand. "Go!" "The leader is Sven. He'll have at least a dozen men with him," I called over my shoulder as I walked out the door. I still had 6 hours of daylight. I filled my boda at the pump and grabbed a sack of oats for my horse. They had a long lead. It would take a while to catch up with them, but I would. I'd do whatever it took to bring her back. I found her once. I would find her again.
Chapter 47.
I woke to a grinning face and a knife at my throat.
If you have the gift, why didn't you see me coming in your dreams?
It was the boy, Eben. He had the voice of a girl, and his eyes were those of a curious waif, a child. But his intent was that of a seasoned thief. He intended to steal my life. If the gift was all that was keeping me alive, Eben didn't seem to have gotten the message. I saw you coming, I said.
Then why didn't you wake to fend me off?
Because I also saw...
He was suddenly catapulted through the air, landing several feet away.
I sat up, looking at Grizz, whom I had seen glaring over Eben's shoulder. While he wasn't fond of me, Grizz also appeared not to tolerate rash, independent decisions. Caden was already on Eben, yanking him from the ground by the scruff.
I wasn't going to hurt her, Eben complained, rubbing his bruised chin. I was just playing with her.
Play like that again, and you'll be left behind without a horse, Caden shouted, and shoved him back to the ground. Remember, she's the Komazar's prize, not yours. He walked over and unshackled my ankle from a saddle, a precaution, he had called it, to make sure I didn't try to make a run for it during the night. And now I'm a prize? I asked. The bounty of war, he said matter-of-factly. I wasn't aware we were at war. We've always been at war. I stood, rubbing my neck, so often abused of late. As I was saying, Eben, the reason I saw no need to wake was because I also saw your dry bones being picked at by buzzards and me riding away on my horse. I guess it could still turn out that way, couldn't it? His eyes widened briefly, contemplating the veracity of my vision, and then he scowled at me, a scowl laced with too much rage for his tender years. The day passed as the one before, hot, dry, grueling, and monotonous. Past the foothills was another hot basin, and another. It was the road to hell, and it afforded me no chance of slipping away. Even the hills were barren. There was nowhere to hide. It was little wonder that we passed no one. Who else would be out in this wasteland? By the third day, I stank as badly as Grizz, but there was no one to notice. They all stank, too. Their faces were streaked with grime, so I assumed mine looked the same, all of us becoming filthy, striped animals. I tasted grit in my mouth, felt it in my ears, grit everywhere, dry bits of hell blowing on the breeze, my hands blistering on the reins. I listened carefully to their grunting babble as we rode, trying to understand their words. Some were easy to decipher. Horse, water, shut up, the girl, kill. But I didn't let on that I was listening. In the evenings, as discreetly as possible, I searched the Venden phrase book inside my bag for more words, but the book was basic and brief. Eat, sit, halt, do not move. Finch often filled the time whistling or singing tunes. One of them made me take note. I recognized the melody. It was a silly song from my childhood, and it became another key to their Venden babble as I compared his Venden words to the ones I knew in Moragese. A fool and his gold, coin piled so high, gathering and hoarding, it reached to the sky. But nary a coin did the fool ever spend, while his pile grew high, the fool only grew thin. Not a pittance for drink, nor a pittance for bread, and one sunny day, the fool found himself dead. If only these fools appreciated a bit of coin, I'd be out of this blasted heat by now. Who was this Komazar who instilled loyalty in the face of riches? And just what did he do to traitors? Could it be worse than enduring this scorching purgatory? I wiped my forehead but felt only sticky grit. When even Finch fell silent, I pass the time thinking about my mother and her long journey from the lesser kingdom of Gastineau. I had never been there. It was in the far north, where winter lasted 3 seasons, white wolves ruled the forests, and summer was a brief blinding green, so sweet that its scent lingered all winter. At least that's what Aunt Burnett said. Mother's descriptions were far more succinct, but I saw her expressions as Aunt Burnett described their homeland, the creases forming at her eyes with both smile and sadness. Snow. I wondered what it felt like. Aunt Burnett said it could be both soft and hard, cold and hot. It stung and burned when the wind pelted it through the air, and it was a gentle cold feather when it drifted down in lazy circles from the sky. I couldn't imagine it being so many opposite things, and I wondered if she had taken license with her story, as Father always claimed. I couldn't stop thinking of it. Snow. Maybe that was the smile and sadness I saw in my mother's eyes, wanting to feel it just one more time. Touch it. Taste it. The way I wanted to taste Taravin just one more time. She'd left her homeland, traveling hundreds of miles when she was no more than my age. But I was certain her journey was nothing like the one I was on now. I looked out at the searing, colorless landscape. No, nothing like this. I uncapped my canteen and took a drink. How I would ever get back to anywhere that was civilized now, I wasn't sure. But I knew I'd rather die lost in this wilderness than be on exhibit among Vendan animals. And they were animals. At night, when we made camp, except for Caden, they couldn't even be bothered to walk behind a rock to relieve themselves. They laughed when I looked the other way. Last night, they had roasted a snake that Malik killed with his hatchet, and then smacked and belched after each bite like pigs at a trough. Caden ripped off a piece of the snake and offered it to me, but I refused it. It wasn't the blood dripping down their fingers or the half-cooked snake that killed my appetite. It was their coarse, vulgar noises. It was apparent very quickly, though, that Caden was different. He was of them, but he wasn't one of them. He still had truths he was hiding. With their chatter quieted, all I had heard for miles now was the maddening repetitive clop of hoof on sand and occasional body noises from Finch, who now rode on my other side instead of Eben. "You're taking me all the way to Venda?" I said to Caden.
"Taking you halfway there would serve no purpose."
"That's on the other side of the continent."
"Ah, so you royals know your geography after all."
It wasn't worth the energy to swing my canteen at his head again. "I know a lot of things, Caden, including the fact that trading convoys pass through the Camlanteau."
"The Provisi caravans?" "Your chances with them would be zero. No one gets within 100 paces of their cargo and lives."
"There are the kingdom patrols."
"Not the way we're going."
He was quick to quash every hope. "How long does it take to get to Venda?"
50 days, give or take a month. "But with you along, twice that."
My canteen flew, hitting him like lead. He grabbed his head, and I got ready to swing again. He lunged at me, pulling me from my horse. We fell to the ground with a dull thud, and I swung again, this time with my fist, catching him in the jaw. I rolled and got to my knees, but he slammed me from behind, pinning me face down against the sand. I heard the others laughing and hooting, heartily entertained by our scuffle.
"What's the matter with you?"
Caden hissed in my ear. His full weight pressed down on me. I closed my eyes, then squeezed them shut tightly, trying to swallow, trying to breathe.
"What's the matter?"
Did that question really require an answer? The sand burned against my cheek. I pretended it was the sting of snow. I felt its wetness on my lashes, its feather-like touch trailing across my nose. What's the matter? Nothing at all. The wind had finally calmed. I listened to the crack and spit of the fire. We had stopped early tonight at the base of another range of hills. I climbed to a crag and watched the sun disappear, the sky still white-hot, not a drop of swirling moisture to lend it color or depth. Caden and I hadn't spoken another word. The rest of the ride had been briefly punctuated by more laughter from the others as they tossed my canteen between them in mock terror, until Caden yelled for them to stop. I stared straight ahead for the rest of the ride, never looking left or right. Not thinking of snow or home, just hating myself for letting them see my wet cheeks. My own father had never seen me cry. "Food," Caden called to me. "Another snake." I ignored him. They knew where I was. They knew I wouldn't run. Not here. And I didn't want to eat their belly-slithering snake that was probably full of sand, too. Instead, I watched the sky transform, the white melting to black, the stars so thick, so close, that here I thought maybe I could reach them. Maybe I could understand. What went wrong? All I had wanted was to undo what I had done, meet my duty, to make sure that nothing happened to Walther, that no more innocents like Greta and the baby would die. I had given up all that I loved to make that happen. Terevin, Birdie, Pauline, Rafe. But now here I was, out in the middle of nowhere, unable to help anyone, not even myself. I was crushed to the desert floor, my face ground into the sand, laughed at, ridiculed, betrayed by someone I had trusted. More than trusted. I had cared about him. I swiped at my cheeks, forcing any more tears back. I looked up at the stars, glittering, alive, watching me. I'd get out of this somehow. I would. But I promised myself I'd expend no more effort fighting insults. I had to save my energy for more important pursuits. I'd have to learn to play their game. Only play it better. It might take me a while, but I had 50 days to learn this game, because I was certain that if I crossed into Venda, I'd never see home again. I brought you some food. I turned and saw Caden holding a chunk of meat speared on his knife. I looked back at the stars. I'm not hungry. You have to eat something. You haven't eaten all day. You forgot? I ate a mouthful of sand at midday. That was plenty. I heard him exhale a tired breath. He came over and sat beside me, laying the meat and knife on the rock. He looked up at the stars, too. I'm not good at this, Leah. I live two separate lives, and usually one never meets the other. Don't fool yourself, Caden. You're not living even one life. You're an assassin. You feed on other people's misery and steal lives that don't belong to you. He leaned forward, looking down at his feet. Even in the starlight, I could see his jaw clench, his cheek twitch. I'm a soldier, Leah. That's all.
Then who were you in Terevin? Who were you when you loaded goods into the wagon for Birdie? When I tended your shoulder? When you pulled me close and danced with me? When I kissed your cheek in the meadow? Who were you then? He turned to look directly at me, his lips half parted, his dark eyes narrowed.
I was only a soldier. That's all I ever was.
When he couldn't look me in the eye any longer, he stood.
Please eat, he said quietly. You'll need your strength.
He reached down and pulled the knife from the meat, leaving the slab of snake sitting on the rock, and walked away. I looked down at the meat.
I hated that he was right. I did need my strength. I would eat the snake, even if I choked on every grain.